Welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Alltag, and thanks to our supporting partner, Aura. Now, my guest this week is Paul Bernard. Now, Paul is a Senior Advisor Investigations at Pinkerton. Paul joined Pinkerton in 2023, but he's got extensive experience from a career in UK policing. Dare say we might touch on that a little bit, including experiences around terrorism, serious and organised crime, fraud and money laundering, and national and international liaison. Now, Paul left policing in 2017, taking on a few roles in the sort of private security arena before joining Pinkerton's in 2023, as we said. So, Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here.
Yours is an interesting one. I know a little bit about your background, and it runs to many pages and even across YouTube. You and I have spoken before, so there's a whole host of things that could be spoken on. So your introduction easily could have just about filled the podcast on its own. So I resisted that temptation, but really good to have you on. Now, before we get going, because you did, you know, the full stint in the police, I've got to ask, young Paul, growing up, am I to assume that you were always destined and wanted a career in the police?
Quite the opposite, actually. Okay. No, it wasn't that way at all. It was actually my karate instructor at the time who said, "You've got a great temperament. You really should think about joining the police." But of course, my family were a little bit, "Well, hang on a second. That's not really what we do." But it was a, what did I want to do at that time? Air travel was unknown, but it was growing. And I thought, do you know what? I'd love to be able to pilot a plane. Not obviously at that age thinking, what is it that it's needed for that? It just seemed that one of those glamorous things, Paul, that you sometimes think about when you're younger. But that never really materialized, to be honest. It was never going to happen. I ended up going into a bank to start with. And really the rest is history from there. So, yeah.
And so am I to assume that you found the bank a little bit sedentary, and then was there an advert or somebody said, or maybe the karate instructor rang you up and said, "I've told you about that temperament, you need to get yourself in the police"?
I think there's a number of things really, but certainly he's that little thing he always told me, it was always in the back of my head, always in the back of my head. Banking was a bit sedentary, wasn't quite for me. I left there and I wanted to have something that was daily exciting. And I just saw an advertisement in the newspaper. And back then you had a visit at home from the local police inspector. And he came round and sort of told me this story and sort of sold it to me, I guess, really. And from that perspective, I never really looked back. But great to have done it, yeah.
And was this back in the day when there was, you know, height targets, if you like? Because at one point you had to be of a certain height. And I know you are a tall guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm tall, so that helped. So realistically then, you had to be above 5'10". That was to be considered. Some other police forces were a bit higher than that. But I do remember when the height restriction went in around 1992. And thank God it did, because you've got now a great variety of people that have joined. But back then, of course, it meant massive changes to uniform. And I remember one or two people joining, they found it very difficult, particularly standing next to a big person like me, where people would come up and talk to me rather than someone else. So I guess it took society a while to adjust to all of that as well, Paul, you know. But it was that was back in the day when height was a bit of an issue, yeah.
And so talk to me about your career. Give me a few waypoints along the way, because I know you've done a whole raft of different functions, but just plot me a little history through.
So joining the MAL86, and I've spent the majority of the next 15, 16 years in uniform roles, from proactive policing. And I'll come back to that later, because it's that passion I've got in me. I love that plainclothes proactivity that you target villains. Absolutely, it's brilliant work. So I got into that sort of work, you know, got a lot of experience behind me, ended up working on proactive teams, ended up going towards the fraud arena in a more of a senior position, which is a little bit of unheard of at the time, because the national lead force of fraud, the City of London Police, they were leading on that. They needed people there. And then I got involved with another great police team, who are funded by the banks, and we proactively targeted, you know, organised crime groups across the country using all sorts of tactics on surveillance to, you know, to proactively understanding how they work using technology. So then I ended up going into counterterrorism. So just as things started getting really bad, but actually from my perspective, to be there then and learn so much was amazing. I ended up heading all of the assets we had in the crime arena in around 2016, and when I left in 2017. So that's a bit of a potted history, Paul, but along the line there's, you know, great experiences in Romania and Holland and the US and China, and, you know, some of the bombs that went off and some of the experiences I've got from those. So it's a bit of a potted history, but there you go.
Am I right in thinking that you once nearly became a, not quite a citizen of Romania, you tried to leave and didn't?
So we had a routine at a certain hotel. We went to Romania a number of times to meet senior people from the ministry and judges and lawyers, trying to work together with the Romanians, which was brilliant. And actually that came off in the end. The fourth time we went there, same routine in the morning, get up at 4 a.m. on the last day to get the 8 o'clock flight. You get a bit of breakfast, grab one of the cabs outside, which was always set up for us. We jump in the taxi, little bit of sleep for half an hour, 40 minutes before we get to the airport. Woke up an hour later, still driving. And my mate said to me, "Don't quite know what's going on," but I said, "Well, maybe there's a bit of a delay getting out of Bucharest." But literally 20 minutes later, we realised we're almost on the Moldovan border, which was going completely the opposite direction from Bucharest. I don't know how on earth we ended up there, but we did. And coming back, thankfully, the driver made some phone calls, and this young guy turned up in this old taxi, big smile on his face, because he's now got a 70-mile journey back to Bucharest, probably the best fare he'd had at that stage. Yeah. So we ended up going through some old ways, shall we say, to get back, not the motorways, between behind horse and carts and bumpy roads. But yeah, brilliant experience, and not one I'd want to repeat, though.
So look, I mean, I know, you know, you can't do a career in policing without having a raft of stories. That is just par for the course, isn't it? So look, you finished in the police, and then I know you had a sort of few years in the commercial world. Where did you sort of first go to post policing, and then tell me how on earth you ended up at Pinkerton's?
Yeah, sure. So I when I left policing, I ended up at company called Ward Security, who are based mainly in Kent, but they also have a national footprint, particularly around London and Manchester. I was there for a couple of years and then sort of left by mutual agreement, I guess. But I then picked up a role with Securitas on one of their big international contracts. And then I sort of went back a bit in my roots to do some lecturing at university for new recruits in policing. And then I had a phone call from a really good friend of mine who's at Pinkerton, who said, "Look, we've got this great role that's come up. It's a senior advisor for investigations in EMEA. And it's about business development, which is you all over. It's that networking piece. It's that speaking piece. Have a look at it." And I was, you know, it's like, Paul, when you get something like that, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll read it. And I was sitting reading it, and my wife was watching my face, and she just turned to me and said, "I don't think you need to read anymore. You know, that's for you. Just you go for that. That looks really great." So that's where I ended up here last year, Paul. It's been an amazing journey. And my interview for the role was at Heathrow Airport, Terminal 3, in the coffee lounge of one of the hotels there at 8:30 in the morning, because my MD, Kurt, flew into London to go to Glasgow, which I'll bring up later on. And we basically met up before he got on his second flight. So that's my journey there.
There you go. And so Pinkerton's is a name that's, you know, getting more and more well-known, you know, in all circles. And we're seeing more and more of Pinkerton's in the retail risk arena as well. But for those that don't know, tell me about the business. What is it that the business does? And then tell me a little bit more about how you fit into that and what you specifically look after.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, so you'll see from the T-shirt, this is...
Yeah, we like the T-shirt.
National Detective Agency. started by Alan Pinkerton in 1850, and he was actually born in Glasgow, hence the original connection. Moved out there, set up the detective agency, started protecting the then president, set up what you call the Secret Service to protect the president, and the rest of that is history too. But started lots of investigations into train robberies, bank robberies, and fraud as well, actually. So today in the UK, we work under sort of four different arms, I guess, one of which is we embed significant numbers of professionals with big organisations who can help them investigate, you know, crunch intelligence, for instance, look at geopolitical issues. We then do lots of work in the protect space. So how do we protect people and assets with risk assessments, threat particularly as well, and also workplace violence. My part is investigation, so I'll come to that back in a second. We do a lot of consulting as well, as you can imagine, a lot of the consultative elements. The investigation elements I'm responsible for across EMEA and partly APAC include things like financial crime and fraud investigations. It also includes things like physical penetration testing, which we're seeing a big uptake on now. But also we like to look at supply chains as well. We investigate where the weaknesses are in supply chains, particularly using what we call our Scout program, which is a program of assessments of current risk and investigations into who you might have on your supply chain. Some of the issues you may not be aware of that might affect how your security on the supply chain is. So there's a significant amount there. And to your point about retail risk, Paul, retail has always been something I've been really interested in, even in policing, because there's always been that balance between showing goods and them being stolen and that commercial element that's needed. And that balance is really difficult to get right all of the time. It's interesting now to see technologies playing a role in this. And we're all aware, of course, of the big uptick in some of the big threats that are out there from organised crime in particular. And that's what I'm interested in, is the supply chain risk, the insider risks. We do investigations on insiders as well. What does that look like and how can that be mitigated? And often, and I learned this during my criminology degree, it's really interesting if you get an external eye to look over what you think you know. And I say that because I was often my own worst critic, and I'd often want people to be critical of me in a good way. And that's, I think, some of the things that we can bring. And because we're relatively agile in how we work, I think that can work effectively for most of our clients.
Cool. It is an absolutely fascinating business, and it's probably not for, for such a broad public consumption. But some of the stuff that I know you guys do, and the partnerships with, you know, retail and brand and policing, and what that's led to is fantastic. So yeah, it's definitely a good and an interesting business that Pinkerton have got there. So explain a little bit more. So I know you sit in the investigations bit. So from a day-to-day basis, you sit down, open your laptop in the morning. So what is taking up the bulk of your time at Pinkerton's? How does that all sort of meld together?
So firstly, the hire of me is twofold. Firstly, develop the business. Let's look at how we can get more prominence for Pinkerton, and use that great machinery we have in the US and across the globe on there, because we're global. How do we use that under that tagline, "We never sleep"?
I've stolen that before. I like that. It's just quite funny.
How do we effectively use that? The second part of my role is to get out front and centre. So I'm always looking for opportunities to speak at events, to promote the company, to get us to sponsor different things like retail risk, for instance, in the fraud space and other areas where I think we can have more of an impact and more visibility for the company, because that's something which the company wants, right? Right now, I'll open my laptop every morning. There'll be different investigations that have popped into the inbox overnight that we're putting out to some of our investigators. And I'll get on the calls with the clients if the teams need me to give some advice on how I think to best approach a different investigation. Once the investigation's completed, we'll be looking at that quality assurance piece. And then the next bit is, well, what have we learned from this? What could we do better for the client next time? Always want to speak to the client. So for me, it's about making sure those avenues are kept open. So that's how my daily routine looks at the moment. Although I guess that, like anything, never sit on your laurels.
So if we're focusing on retail then, so from your perspective, how are you seeing the retail landscape right now? And, you know, how could retailers best use Pinkerton and what you offer?
So I'll go back to policing, okay? And it's used now in the private sector as well under the 4P model, which started in counterterrorism, which is all about how can we protect people and assets? How can we prepare? So if something does happen, we are resilient enough to deal with it. Then how can we help prevent things happening in the first place? That might be for education. It might be internal internal education. It might be a bit of external and also some of your supply chain education. Then the pursue bit, that's also where we can help. We can help with the first three, definitely, with some of the risk stuff I spoke about. But I'm a great believer in proactivity. And I know I've got a lot of good police friends, even now. And, you know, they struggle with resource and demand. And we've heard this narrative so many times in the retail space. But as in Australia, you know, Adam Chambers from Pinkerton, Adam's got a great model that works there where we embed, and I said about embedding professionals with retailers who can crunch the intelligence picture they're seeing through some of the platforms that are used, such as Aura. We can then use that to target the criminals. So it might be AMPR data, it might be facial recognition, it might be names that come up. It could be all sorts of issues that we're facing, descriptions. And then we can proactively target them using surveillance. But because Adam's built great relationships with the police, it's not a something that you're going to call on as a police and you think, oh, who's this? It's Adam. It's been done professionally. So from my perspective, and having spoken extensively to Adam and my knowledge of the UK and the fact that we've got access to surveillance teams and great investigators, it's two avenues. I think that model could also work here, Paul. And it's just adding to that sort of toolkit that people need and understanding what it can and can't do, but also how you have to be proportionate with what you're doing. You've got to make sure it's legal. It's got to be accountability. And it's the professionals you use to do that who've got that experience that we have that can ultimately make a difference. And I do think you need all four. I see a lot of stuff on prevention and, you know, because that's where the money, sometimes it's not enough money, they're pursuing people. And policing, I know there's some great, you know, I've spoken to a number of people involved in policing and with the retail groups who are doing some fantastic work to target harden and target the specific criminals we're talking about here. I mean, the more the merrier for me. I think the more we target it, the more the new story for the retailer gets out there, the better. Pinkerton wouldn't necessarily want that because from our perspective, it's what the retailer wants and it's what others want to see. So we're just there to facilitate that, Paul. But you can tell that's where my sort of passion comes across in it, yeah?
Yeah, and I remember talking to a large Australian retailer at a private gathering, and they said to me, when they have an issue or an investigation that gets to the point where they don't know what to do with it or where to turn, they give it to you guys, which I thought was quite an interesting way to sort of describe it. When it escalates to such a point, or you realize it's got organized crime in it, or it goes somewhere where it needs that next level, but maybe it's not yet ready to put a bow on it, hand it to the police, they were sort of leaning on the Pinkerton expertise. So it was a very, very interesting model that they were adopting, but they were getting great success.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, Paul. I mean, if investigations are sometimes overly complex, okay? For me, they fall within sort of four categories, I guess. You know, what do you know now? What don't you know? What's consistent with what you know and what's inconsistent? And all of that then starts to mold into what type of investigation have we got here and what do we now need to find out to prove a substantive criminal offence or even a civil offence. And if you can start to prove those with information you've already got, Number one, it's cheaper. Number two, ultimately, it's less resource. If it needs more expenditure to do so, then we'll do that in a really fair way, because I don't think there's anything, you know, you want to make sure that investigation stays focused. My job is to make sure that does stay that way. We are focused on the investigation in front of us to make sure we answer the problem offered to us by the client.
So people listening are kind of interested, or changing tack slightly. You're going to be with us at Retail Risk London on the 18th of April. But not only that, you're going to be running a round table as well. Hopefully you're looking forward to joining us on the day and running that round table as well.
Yeah, very much so. I like the idea, Paul. It's a conversation. That's where I think we can learn so much, you know. And of course, you know, there's one or two things I can sort of mention during that, which I'll save until the day. But the actual point of it really is a conversation, giving people, I would think, those that need it, a bit of an education on this, just a bit of an opening up that box that might have seemed a little bit sort of scary and frightening, or just unknown, right? Just to listen to what it's about, what could be done, what can't be done, what can be solved, what can't be solved. But just to have that conversation, I'm so excited to meet so many people, you know, looking at who's been there in the past, from where they're from. There's so much excitement in it. And you can tell just by looking how seriously people take this subject matter in loss prevention, you know, the whole risk element. Well, there was ACES Europe last week, Paul, and one of the big themes there last week was all around risk and resilience. That's the type of world we're in now. You need that risk focus. You need that resilience to sort of move on. So, yeah, that's the piece where we are. And I think, you know, surveillance and investigations in particular, they can give that element of resilience as well, help you manage risk. So I'm looking forward to the conversation, Paul.
And it is interesting, more and more we're seeing retailers and brands do more of the investigation piece themselves, you know, want to pursue that a little bit more. And maybe, you know, once upon a time, maybe it's just a case of, well, if I can get it out of my door, then that's my job done. But there's this level of collaboration going on with the realization that if something's happening to me, it's happening to other retailers as well, or vice versa. So,
yeah,
you know, by pursuing things a little bit more, maybe using yourselves, listening to what you've got to say, it definitely feels as if it's, you know, the right message at the right time. So I guess for you, any of those retailers that are in that collaboration space, investigations, want to know what can be done, you're like, come and join me, come and talk to you.
100%, Paul. I've worked on a number of police teams before who were funded by different organisations collectively. Yep. And the agreement in place was about the level to which they could have a say in how the police were operating. Now, in the commercial world, that's going to be a different type of model. But I think what it does demonstrate, when there's collaboration and there's an understanding about a shared risk, there's effectively far more that can be done to mitigate the risk. What I mean by that, if you and I, we are not like that. If we were targeting a certain big retailer, we're not just going to be targeting that retailer.
No.
There will also be a risk within there, that retailer, or an insider risk, whether it's inside the organization or inside a part of the supply chain. And those are the elements that need to be unpicked collectively. And it takes a lot of will to do that, doesn't it not? And a lot of trust, a lot of, you know, sign up to, you know, modus operandi and memorandums of understanding, so everyone understands what we're trying to achieve with it. And I think it seems to me to be a journey that everyone's on, and it's certainly an exciting one to be involved in. And we'd all obviously like to see that risk run right down, so that we're back to a level which everyone could say, yeah, we don't like it, but we can manage that level.
Yeah, it definitely feels as if it's somewhat above that acceptable line, doesn't it, at the minute? So we'll see. So just looking ahead to, you know, the rest of 2024, for you personally or Pinkerton, you know, any specific milestones, anything that you go, this is what we want to achieve? I know there was talk of getting you to Retail Risk Cape Town as well. So that's on the list to get you to that amazing amazing city. But in a serious note, what's the sort of, what's the target for the rest of the year?
Well, we've already seen business growth, which is fantastic. We've got lots of options in place to make sure that continues to grow. As I said, our visibility has got to be everything. But then people have got to trust the people, i.e., the people like myself, people like Sandra, people like Kim, Lindsay, Sergio, and Brittany, others I could name who are part of this great team. Now, Maria, we all can focus globally on what we need to deliver with our global directors. And it's joining up those dots, which we've started to do. It's bringing business in for all the elements I mentioned. So the next stages are, we want to win the trust of people to provide them a service. That's what we want, the trust of people to provide that service and give them the confidence that Pinkerton can solve some of those problems that they see. That's where we are. So this next few months, for instance, we've got retail risk coming on. Some of the team will be in other parts of the globe, in different other conferences as well, in all the elements I've mentioned before. So I think by the end of the year, what will success look like? It will look like we've had a growth in revenue, but also we've got connections that we've not had before, and we're working on those connections to bring solutions to people and to businesses. And that's exciting. ASIS last week, for instance, met a couple of few really great people out there we'll be talking to in the next couple of weeks. And that, I think, is the beauty of having those face-to-face contacts that we all like and enjoy. And you know you can actually get things done when you're face-to-face. So, yeah, it's looking an exciting time. And I can't wait to see you on the 18th, Paul.
Yeah, it's I'm thrilled that you're going to be there. It's we've been Pinkerton's been leading the charge in Australia really for the last few years in terms of what we're doing in retail risk. So we've become very aware of the business. There's some retailers there that just sing Pinkerton's praises morning, noon, and night, it seems. So yeah, I'll wish you all the best in developing the same in the UK. I dare say you probably need to put the same T-shirt on the day, so we've got continuity with you walking around, or at the very least, hang it somewhere prominent so we know where to find you. But for now, Paul, thank you
No
very much for
worries.
taking the time to join me. I'll see you in person in the very near future at Retail Risk London. But for the rest of today, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate your time. Thank you.